Welcome in, everybody. This is Inside the Gamecocks, the show. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide, and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. As always, my co-host, J.C. Sherbert, and it's Friday, J.C., so we welcome in Matt Anderson, the late-night Gamecock himself. Welcome in, guys.
Yeah. Pleased to be here.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle right now.
I did. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I reposition my head.
I kind of like that. Oh, one out. There we go.
I'll hang out over on this side like I always do. So, anyway, the chat box, McKellar Enterprises chat box is wide open. There's a lot of memory lane through here. Harrison sat through 24 LSU and 15 Citadel. Those are two different things. 15 Citadel, I hated that for Sean Elliott because that team was playing much better after he took over and Mangus took over. And Spurrier, yeah, sometimes even when you think Spurrier's, one thing he always used to say, he doesn't make excuses. And I think he was absolutely right. He had lost the team and they needed a new voice. And that team played a lot of competitive football. 7-point loss at A&M. They could have won the Tennessee game. Tennessee was really good. I think Tennessee won 9 games that year, but they weren't bad. Tennessee got up 17-0 in Knoxville, which usually means the Gamecocks are about to get run out of that stadium. And boy, they came back. And then they're driving, and Perry Orth, our friend, that's hopefully Perry will be back this football season, throws a pass to Jarrell Adams, NFL draft pick. And Jarrell breaks free into the secondary, and it was going to be tough to keep the Gamecocks from scoring. And the kid from Tennessee forced a fumble, and he fumbled. They lost by 3. The Clemson final score was 37-32. If it weren't for a bad call, Carolina could have really made things interesting. Florida game, Florida got up 17-0, I think. And then maybe 24-6. 24-14 was the final. Not too bad, but then that Citadel loss, man. Couldn't stop the option. Nobody knew. I mean, John Hoke wasn't going to know how to stop Turk. And Lorenzo, they weren't going to know how to draw something to stop that. And then the Citadel fullback ran roughshod. And then they just didn't get enough offense. But Pharaoh Cooper called a 97-yard touchdown. They got called back at the end. Carolina would have won in a miracle, but. No sense in rehashing the past, but Hope has been through the 90 and the 2015 loss. Yeah, just call down the Citadel and be like, y'all going back to the option, which they should, I think, in football. I think the Citadel should go back to play on option, but don't play Carolina. You know,
no,
it's like when Steve thinks talking about Coach Spurrier. With the, it's okay to be put in handcuffs, just don't go to the slammer. It's okay to schedule the Citadel, just don't schedule when they're playing that option, run to that option. So, Lance's kid's first game was the 2015 Citadel game. Well, he's been introduced to the life of a Gamecock pretty good.
Right. I mean, you know, you got to bring him in right.
Quantrill says that everyone gather around, it's the season finale of Friends. Yeah.
And, you know, JC, if they had just found a way to win that Clemson game, I mean, Clemson was number one in the country, too. Some salvaging of just a terrible couple weeks there for the Gamecocks. It's just so tough.
That would have been 4 in a row at Williams-Brice, too. And I still, up until the 2017 game, I think I was more – I was kind of like a Carolina truther. I don't know. I always thought Muschamp's teams had good players. Just not as good as Clemson's. But the 17 game is what made me think, man, there's a huge gap in this thing, and it's not turning anytime soon. Because that was a 9-win South Carolina football team that was in the top 25. Had they had a 24-team playoff at the time, I did the research on this. If Carolina had won, they would have made the 24-team playoff. And boy, Clemson wasn't even – that was probably not their best team during that run because it was the Kelly Bryant year. And they ended up playing Bama. They were undefeated, and then they were seeded first. And Bama was seeded fourth. Because that was in 17, that was the year Auburn actually won that division. Because Auburn was the best team in the country for 2 weeks. They blew Georgia, blew the doors off Georgia. They had Jarrett Stidham. And then they beat the Tide by like 12. And Clemson goes down to New Orleans, which that's one place Clemson's never done really well in, the Sugar Bowl. Mm-hmm. If you notice, some of the L's they've taken in the playoff, 14 playoff, have all been there. And that may be their only losses in the playoff. But Phoenix, they've beaten Ohio State twice in Phoenix, Orange Bowl, all that. But New Orleans hadn't been good to them. And Bama beat their behinds 24-6, just thumped them. And so Carolina should have had a shot. Well, they didn't. I mean, I think Hunter Renfrow caught a little screen pass and went like 70 yards and outran everybody in the secondary. Carolina was a little chippy in that game, a lot of penalties. Clemson's up 34-0 by the third quarter, and Gamecock scored a garbage 10 points. But that's when I kind of knew, okay, this thing's getting out of hand. So, but it's back to normal now. They don't have any more talent than the Gamecocks. And Carolina's won two in a row up there.
I wonder if Quantrell's talking about Ryan Mallett back in, gosh, what year was that? What day was that game?
2011.
Yeah, 2010 or 2011. 2010 was maybe the coldest game I've ever been at Williams-Bryce when they won 41-20.
Yeah, that was just – that was because then you had to go to Florida to win the division, and you're like, oh, crap, this is not going to be good. And things worked out. But that game, I mean, but one thing I was talking about, I had a piece on thebigspur.com about how it's good not to play Missouri this year, right, guys? Because it's just like it's an important year. And sometimes certain coaches and teams have certain coaches' numbers. I'm convinced now, after 5 years of watching it, that Eli Drinkwitz has Clayton White's number somehow, some way. Even the game Carolina won, Noel lines up and rushes for a 150 against one of the best defenses Carolina's had, right? At home in Williams-Brice, and they almost won. So I was writing how it was good that they weren't playing them. And one coaching matchup that didn't go the Gamecocks' way was when Ellis Johnson was here. Bobby Petrino gave him all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas had players, but you just could tell, like, something about those games against Petrino, it seemed like Petrino stayed like one step ahead or something like that. I always think it's because Ellis was his D coordinator for 30 days out there, if you remember. Remember Ellis Johnson and Whammy went to Arkansas? That's crazy. And then Brian Van Gorder came here, and Van Gorder goes back to the Falcons as the DC. So Spurrier hires Ellis. And so maybe that's why. I don't know. But that was interesting. And that 2011 team that lost to Arkansas hurt them, because it was the draw of the West that hurt those teams. Like, Georgia had a little bit of a, you know, pretty easy go of it, you know, as far as who they got in 2011 and 2012 compared to Carolina. Because Carolina in 12, Carolina had LSU and who else from the West that year? Did they win? Because they lost two games. So they lost to LSU on the road. They lost to Florida. The other West team was like Mississippi State. In 11, they had Auburn and Arkansas. Auburn game was terrible. It was at home. That was I think Michael Dwyer ran it 41 times, and Carolina's offense was just bad. They lost 16-13, so that put them behind the eight ball. So they had to have that Arkansas game, 44-28. I do believe you're right, my friend. Ryan Mallett destroyed them. Michael Dyer, you're right, in 2011, like you mentioned. I may have called him Dwyer. And the Marquez North thing, I blame Steve Spurrier Jr. for that loss. for irrationally for a couple of days. Because he recruited Ahmad Christian out of Jacksonville, who gave the pass up. And they didn't recruit Marquez North that heavily. He was from Charlotte. Tennessee was a struggle city at the time. That was Butch Jones' worst team. Champions, well, until the end. Champions of life. And they came. I think they won two SEC games all year. I was at that game with the worst human being I've ever dated in my life. She's a teacher, no doubt, but she's a UT grad. I lived in Nashville at the time. We got our butts up super duper early to drive over to Knoxville. You get there. I had gotten tickets through USC, so we're right behind the band. And there was just something off about that. Like Carolina had beaten Arkansas at Arkansas 52-7 the week before. Because the SEC and all their genius that year in 13, historically, this would have been tougher than it was. At Arkansas, at Tennessee, at Missouri. And they had beaten Arkansas like a drum. Tennessee wasn't very good. And Carolina just couldn't get anything going. There was something off about that one. I mean, when Carolina scored, they, you know, threw long. Yeah, I think, who was it? Shaw hit Demir Byrd on a long touchdown. Mike Davis ran it. And it looked like Carolina was going to win the game. I mean, I think they were at 21-17 and then two field goals. And on that play that North caught, Clowney was closing in on, was it Justin Worley, who was the quarterback at Northwestern. Just missed him by a fraction of a second. Was about to obliterate him. Worley threw the pass. The kid comes down with an unbelievable catch. I think he pinned it against Ahmad Christian's shoulder pads and then drew it in. And they set up the winning field goal and won the game. But that was a very costly loss. But I watched Northwestern play South Point in high school when Clowney was a senior, Rock Hill Memorial Stadium. And I think Worley was the quarterback for them, I believe, at the time. Same type of play. And I think Cordero Patterson was the receiver who ultimately, ironically, after JUCO, played at Tennessee. I think I'm remembering this right. And Worley dropped back in that one. Clowney comes off the edge. A half second obliterates him. Worley lets it fly deep. Because Northwestern's offense at the time, there's a lot of dink and dunk, you know, sideline to sideline stuff, that kind of offense. And they go downfield to Cordero. And that was a touchdown for Northwestern. I think Northwestern actually won that game. It was very close. But so history sometimes repeats itself.
So I'm going down all these – past seasons now, JC, and it hurts to look back at. I'm on the 2012 LSU game right now that Dexter's mentioning, and
I was at that one. I was in Nashville at the time, and I went by myself. I had tickets because at the time I got tickets to all the away games from my family. They just gave them to me, and so I used them. I think Carolina played Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt that year, so I got them, and it was like 5 o'clock on a Friday in Nashville, and I didn't have anything to do. I didn't have my dog yet, Red. So I was just in the apartment by myself, and I was like, you know what? I got money. I got gas. Baton Rouge is – I can drive most of the night. Because you go down to Birmingham, you go over to Tuscaloosa, and you hit Meridian. Then you turn on this road 50 – it's called 59. It's the worst stretch of road ever. There's nothing till you get to Hattiesburg. Then when you get past Hattiesburg, you turn up back through, you know, Biloxi and Gulfport and get into Louisiana, New Orleans, Baton Rouge. So I drove late into the night, stayed the night at Hattiesburg, got up the next day, and just went to the game by myself. I was staying at a Holiday Inn Express? It had a bar at it. I remember that. But it was in Baton Rouge. Took a shuttle bus to the game, and I remember them talking about, you know, this is Steve Spurrier's best team he's had at Carolina, blah, 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 because Carolina just beaten Georgia. Kind of was third in the country. And I got to the game. I'm sitting kind of in the end zone, Carolina section, and it's loud. I love going to games at LSU. And my brother, who's a pilot, Jason, sent me a – and I've probably told this story a million times, but, hell, it's the season 4 finale. So
that's right.
Like, oh, my God, he's telling a story again. It's like that movie Lincoln. Well, back when I was, you know, drink of water in Tennessee, you know, all that good stuff. So I get a picture for my brother on my cell phone, and it's of the exact view I'm looking at. And I'm like, this is peculiar. And for two sections over, and he had flown some clients down for the game. I had no idea he was going to be there. So, and I never get to see him. So I hung out with my brother, and, you know, we ended up, there's a little bar out in the parking lot and near the stadium. And yeah, we ended up catching, just wanting to catch up because he's my brother, you know. We ended up walking out. It was a great second half, but we ended up walking out and saying, let's just go catch it on TV. The bar's probably empty, and it was. So we sat out there and watched it. That was a tough one. That was if Carolina, you know, and then whatever happened the next week. But, yeah, there were some painful losses. 13 Tennessee was the most, though. Number one, it's Tennessee. And number two, they weren't very good. Number three, it was Champions of Life, who they were coaching against. And then how things played out that season. Because you remember the next week they go to Missouri, Spurrier starts Dylan Thompson. Connor Shaw kind of had some injuries a lot that year, right? Available, but didn't play. Carolina's getting shut out. Connor Shaw gets put in the game. Miracle, amazing comeback. Clutch plays. Missouri misses the field goal. They're number five in the country. Carolina gets a top five win on the road. But had they beaten Tennessee, you know, that year, South Carolina finished fourth in the country largely because their schedule strength was up there. Because Clemson was good. UCF, who they beat on the road, was undefeated except for Carolina. Missouri was a top five win on the road. And with how they did the BCS at the time, you know, if Carolina had played an Auburn team, speaking of Ellis Johnson, that got into the SEC championship game because of the kick six, you know, that was a good team and playing their best ball, but I'll take, you know, Spurrier, you know, against Ellis Johnson, and then Auburn's defense or offense with Malzahn, they would have scored some points. Carolina's 2013 defense was a little suspect, but you still had Clowney and Kelsey Quarles. And, you know, Carolina, I think Carolina would have had a good chance to beat that Auburn team. Well, up in Indianapolis, Michigan State upsets undefeated Ohio State. And that's when Urban Meyer, I thought he was going to cry, but he was eating the pizza after the game. I'm just going to eat this pizza because I can't believe we lost. The Buckeyes lost. South Carolina would have gone to the Rose Bowl to play for the – imagine this, and this is going to kill you. The Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all, and played Spurrier's old nemesis, Florida State, and famous Jameis Crablegs philosopher. He's a philosopher now in the NFL, Jameis Winston. Kelvin, that great team Jimbo had for all the marbles. And I don't care if Carolina would have won it or not. My happy butt would have been in the stands in Pasadena for that one. And that would have been just an amazing storyline.
Well, JC, you brought up Jameis Winston. Do you remember what happened after South Carolina lost that Tennessee game?
Was it when he got arrested for crab legs? I don't know.
No, it's when he went into Death Valley and hung 51 points.
Oh, I forgot about that. No, I watched that one. That was one. I was kind of, because we were watching that and being there.
It came on right after the Gamecock game, and it was the only time with anybody I was with had.
Prime time, and Florida State beat them 51-14. Dabo, after the game, that's the best team in the country. And Dabo just chalked it up to like, oh, they're pretty good. And they were. Auburn should have beaten them, though, in that final, which shows you when you have 30 days off, you have a different football team. But the playoff committee still thinks buys are a reward. But anyway. All right, so let's get to some news. Chas Coleman, speaking of Tennessee, big-time Gamecock portal target. Carolina almost got him. It's from Penn State. Skilled pass rusher. Don't know physically after kind of seeing him in some pictures and stuff and looking at his production last year. I don't know what kind of a year one impact he would have had anywhere. But, you know, he was – Carolina felt pretty good about it. Then he told them, like, look, man, I'm going to take less money and go to Ohio State because I want to go home. I need to go home. Well, then all of a sudden, 2 hours later, he signs with Tennessee, which probably had to do with money. And now he was AWOL from spring practices and summer workouts, and now he's just dismissed, right, from the program. Sounds like they got tired of waiting on him.
Well, JC, I can tell you, like, that morning, that was South Carolina, Georgia in basketball when I was getting texts, okay, Gamecocks feel good. Oh, crap, it's Ohio State. Oh, crap, Gamecocks are back in it. Oh, crap, it's Tennessee, ? And yeah. Then it was Tennessee. I do have a little bit of information on this, not really pertaining to the Gamecocks, but more pertaining to the kid. I know he's getting just trashed everywhere. I picked up some information that the kid is really a good kid. The issue is where he playing at Tennessee and the amount of money they paid him. It's caused a lot of issues back home. And the Tennessee tried to do their best to cover for him, but at some point it just became too much. He truly just needs to step away from football and get some time and mend the relationships in his life that need to be mended and let go of the ones that don't. He was under tremendous pressure. So who knows what that had been like in South Carolina? Who knows what it'd be like at Ohio State? Who knows what it'd been like if he stayed at Penn State? But this is where NIL just is a terrible thing for 18, 19, 20-year-old kids to have to deal with at this point in their life.
Yeah, it sounded to me because he kind of went to the highest bidder. I mean, like he told Carol, I mean, there's all kinds of things there with him too. It's like not a kind of a fearful flyer, of course. Family didn't want to fly. Quantrell said, how does medically disqualified work? I question that a little bit from Tennessee's standpoint. There, that may be an NIL thing, you know.
Yeah, something tells me that's specific.
That has to do with like, so you don't sue us, you know, for your contract. But, you could do mental health with it, you know, like this guy's, you know, but you know, like I said, he very close to Deion Barnes and just was like, I mean, Carolina thought they were getting it. You know, I'm kind of glad they didn't now because I think you think of what Tennessee's on the schedule. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you think about when Carolina got Caleb Herring because Tennessee is like, oh, okay, well, you know, you won't go ahead. And, UT got Coleman, but Coleman can't hurt you now, you know?
No.
I mean, I hate to be that blunt about it, but, you know, and at the end of the day, he went, you know, he or his people that decide for him decided to take the bigger payday. You know, Knoxville is closer to Ohio than Columbia. It's about 3 hours closer. So I got it, but this doesn't, given the reasons I was given, doesn't surprise me. And what you say, Matt, tracks, because it's like, yeah, I mean, you got things unsettled on the homestead. It's hard to be somewhere when your mind is someplace else.
Yes, exactly. And
money makes things even worse.
Even with Chas Coleman, though, I mean, he was kind of going to be the heir apparent to Dylan Stewart for South Carolina. And we reported that. Yeah. And it was going to be, you know, pass rushing specialists, get him in on third downs, obvious passing plays. But it was going to be get him a year in the strength and conditioning system, get him familiar with Clayton White's scheme. Really, you were just going to let him, you know, pin his ears back and go this year. But to be ranked as high as he was in the transfer portal, there was a lot of projection there.
Tons. Tons. I don't know how you look at him physically. And because somebody eyeballed him going to Penn State and said 3-star. And I look, and you look at 3-star, I'm like, he's undersized. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess more what I'm just saying there is, you know, who's to say they wouldn't have got Herring if they had Coleman as well? We don't know those things. We don't know how the money would have played out. But for next year, Herring's more important than Chas Coleman would have been to South Carolina.
Absolutely. And Caleb Herring can play the run really well. He's got natural pass rushing ability too. And so, I think Carolina got the better end of that deal. And I think they would have even if Coleman were still at Tennessee, except on third now. Third now. But I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess the other part of Tennessee taking him, why you wanted him, was from what I've read, and I don't know, you know, sometimes these things are overrated. Jim Knowles, who I think is one of the best D coordinators in America, not for what he did at Ohio State necessarily, but when he was at Oklahoma State, they don't play any defense in Oklahoma State. He had a really good defense, you know, at Oklahoma State. So what they say is it takes a couple of years to learn it. So Coleman already being in that system probably would have set him up for some success with Tennessee, maybe. But anyway, like Gamecock 346 says in the Emily Cutler Enterprise chat box, pray the kid does what's right. Chep steps away and gets himself right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's a bad, I mean, he's getting lit up, but I don't, knowing what I know about him wanting to just take less money and stay close to home. Sometimes people tell you they want to do things, believe them.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right. Just believe them. Just bow out gracefully, you know. But like Quantrell said, this is super duper. It's a business decision on both sides, and sometimes you strike out in business. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody bats 1,000, my friend. Nobody strikes out 1,000. Quantrell says, how does medically disqualified work? It's team-to-team basis. He can play again.
Yeah.
That's Tennessee's interpretation of it. Okay, so I'll give you an example. Nick Saban with the Dolphins. The Dolphins doctor medically disqualified Drew Brees. But the Saints doctor didn't care, did he?
That's you know,
right. Wasn't going to do that, was yeah. he? So I'm sure he'll play again. I think he'll be on a roster this season. I think what he'll do is go to Ohio State for no NIL or whatever and get his life right close to home and see bus.
Yeah, walk on and then play for next year's money.
Yeah. This is the final episode of season 4 of Inside the Gamecocks, the show, the morning show. It's been called the show. Now we got the two parts. And we'll be back, you know, next month and all that. But I want to reiterate what Bradford said earlier. Just really appreciate all of y'all and our loyal audience, which grows exponentially and all that good stuff. But the live won't be there, but we'll have stuff. Stay tuned to the podcast channel, the YouTube channel. We got lots cooking, and you know, but we'll be back live and loud for SEC Media Days. In between the time that now and when you hear from us again, GamecockTraditions.com will be stocked full of Nike.
Yeah,
and Gamecock Traditions Village of Sand Hill in Columbia, also out in Lexington. They are our proud partners here. Certainly appreciate that. Then there's about 3 Taco Tuesdays and wing specials at D's you need to go check out. Yeah, all that. Go to Henry's, too, on Divine. Get you a Sandstorm Mule. 25% of the Sandstorm Mule drinks go to the Garnet Trust and NIL to take care of all these teams can continue to recruit. We'll be back to wrap things up after this on the show.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment of season 4 here on Inside the Gamecock Show. Big thank you from all of us, of course. Just to reiterate that from my box for all of your support throughout these years. It's been overwhelming. It's great to consider a lot of y'all friends now as well. Yeah. And
I've met a lot of people.
Ride, man. Yeah, man. We've met some really good people doing people. This.
Yeah. Got to hang out with some of them last weekend. Gamecock 346 has a great thing. Let's talk about the Sandstorm Mule. You can get it at Henry's on Divine, by the way. Support Garnet Trust.
That's right.
He says if his wife would let him, he would literally buy a mule and name it Sandstorm.
You should just do it. Like Sandstorm. Everyone loves a mule.
Just do it.
I am Sandstorm the Mule. You give a mule a name like that, he's going to forget he's a mule. He's going to think he's running in the Kentucky Derby, a thoroughbred.
That's right, yeah.
I am Sandstorm
the Mule. I am Show Pony.
Yeah, it's not like Donkey from Shrek. I think you can't let the mule get the big head now.
Hey, look, mules can literally be jackasses, too. There's a reason they're in the horse pens.
I could bring home a mule. And everyone in my house would be happy.
It would be, they'd embrace it, really.
I mean, yeah, they would love it.
I mean, I could hear Dina now. Hold up. Got to go feed the mule.
That's right. Hold on. You know
Allie
what?
Allie'd probably just sit there and watch it all day. Like, and dig and write down like behavioral tendencies.
That's right.
She's so smart. Phil's youngest one's just like got this science. I think she takes after because Phil's really, really good at science. You know, she's got that very.
She's very inquisitive. Yeah, but yeah.
Very inquisitive. That's a good word. Inquisitive. Mm-hmm.
Like if she kept all the fruit flies,
but also
trash came for a while.
Oh
right?
My goodness! Yeah, right. Yeah, like a damn science experiment. Oh my goodness! I'll never forget that. That was almost traumatic. That was on the verge of being traumatic. It was for my wife.
We've been talking about all these Gamecock football games. This title of this episode should be traumatic finale.
Yeah, I started writing down memory lane, and I'm like, no, that's not good enough.
That's not good enough for this.
I think my favorite thing for the past year was JC's yard sale. That was amazing.
Was that last summer or
it was this past year? I know it was the last 12 months. I think.
It was last summer.
After I know. We came back from break, before football season. Yes,
it was then. Yeah. Right, so
it was. So it was one of the first things we had, and
that was years. It was the community yard sale in our neighborhood. They Matt got a email about it the other day. We need to have one because we got to move soon. So we're like, we're not to South Carolina.
You sold like old beer to some lady.
Yeah. It was unopened.
An unopened pack of Miller Lite,
right? For $5. Retails for about $25.
That's right.
$17.
That was a deal.
I'll take it home to my husband and put it in the up here. They have garage beer, and everybody hangs out in their garage except mm-hmm. us, because you can't move. You can't. Well, you barely walk to the second fridge. But some people like, gosh. My first week I lived here, Nat took me to this guy invited us to his house to watch the Bears out in the garage. I was like, well, I don't know about this. Shoot, it's like a sports bar out in the garage.
Yeah, that's what they had. Like, there's a guy on my street. He has that. He has a pool table. He has four TVs. Yeah. He hangs out there all the time.
I mean, it's pretty common. Since she was like, I'm putting it in my husband's garage. Yeah, some guys go out, they have the fridge with the beer, and they go out there and work on their car.
Hey, you know what? That makes sense, though, because there's a guy who recently moved into our neighborhood. He's a Cubs fan, right? And that's kind of strange. I mean, it's strange and it's not, right? Like, there are a lot of Cubs fans around here, but this guy is like really like flies the W when they win and stuff like that. So it makes me feel like he's local.
Yeah.
And his garage setup is immaculate. Like,
I would imagine he's
got nice comfy like recliner. They don't park their car in there. It's his space.
Oh no, the guy that I'm talking about, he doesn't have a lawnmower or anything in there. Like, he pays someone to do his grass. Like, it's just his area that he's like, my wife can't tell me jack crap when I'm in here. And if she gets mad, I got a couch. He's fine. Yeah.
Smith makes a good point. He's like, they aren't big on porch sitting up north. Aren't.
No.
I like my back porch, but I'm from where? The South. You know?
That's right.
Yeah. People are like, why is he on the porch all the time? Yeah, because I don't sit in the garage like you idiots.
He's always outside.
I don't need to breathe that stuff in there. But he said, they're not my big on porch sitting up north, big on garage sitting. Yeah, and they'll have heaters and stuff in there, too. It just gets too cold, so. Bobby said his old man in Charleston lives in the garage / lounge from 3 p.m. daily till he shuts it down. That's the life.
Nice.
That's the life. Quantrell does point out mules are incredibly intelligent animals. Might be worth the investment.
Mm-hmm. Do they eat? What again? Will it clear my backyard like a goat would? Because I'm ready to invest in a goat.
Man,
you will have it, no grass.
What's the HOA gonna say if you have a mule and a goat?
I really don't care at this point.
Yeah, we're gonna find you. Don't take the trash out anymore. Just throw it in the backyard. The goat will get it.
I'm gonna charge you $25 a month, every month.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about that.
HOAs are the worst.
All right, so Matt's been doing some diving in. We're gonna talk a little football here to leave you. Nick Harbor. I've been thinking about him lately, and I'll tell you why. I think there's some expectation that this is his year set up kind of for him to do big things. So Treylon Burks, who played at Arkansas when Kendall Briles was the OC there, last year I think it was 2021. That was their best team. That Arkansas team went 9-4. They beat all their rivals. They beat LSU. They beat A&M. They beat Texas, and who else did they beat? Maybe three rivals. Arkansas didn't own Missouri. They won. That's the one year they won the Red Line rivalry. So they're 9-4. KJ Jefferson was a first year starter. So I went back and watched the A&M game. Now, if you know anything about that game when they played at Jerry World in Dallas, they played it there for years. I think they're home and home again now. It was usually close, no matter how bad. Or even Chad Morris played it close. And A&M usually wins no matter how good Arkansas. I mean, it just happened that way every single time. This game Arkansas won, and I was watching some of it. And I was like, holy cow. You know, when you see all the pieces in place, they ran the ball, you know, sort of like they did the next year, but it wasn't as run heavy. Rocket Sanders was on that team, but they had another back that was a starter. And what made me think of Nick Harbor is like you're sitting there watching them, dude, and there's all this, they're going fast, right? Very fast. There's all these different nuanced run plays. The tight end dump to Josh Simon, that was part of their offense. They'll throw it to the back. Like they had a play kind of reminded me of Spurrier where KJ dropped back and he gave it a little just brief moment. And then nobody's open. So there's the running back out in the flat. You know, we haven't seen a lot of that, right? It's since the Spurrier left, the running back and the flat safety valve is what they call it. They'll run that. Dude, they tried to throw a double pass on third and two and completed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun, but you're sitting there watching all this window dressing, eye candy, all these creative plays. And then all of a sudden, KJ just takes the snap, tosses it down the right sideline, a nine route, Treylon Burks, wide open, touchdown. My theory is, I think you can use Nick Harbor in that way. I'm not saying Nick is as skilled of a receiver as Burks, but I'm saying, and Matt's researched a lot of this, the way the deep ball kind of came out for him last year, what he's gotten better at is getting off the line, getting past the DB and getting open that way with his speed. I think we could see that as part of
this. Let me tell you this, JC. And I just pulled up Treylon Burks and Nick Harbor side by side right here. Just kind of looking at them. Treylon Burks went from a 16.7 average depth of targets, so 16.7 yards his first year to a 9.7. Now, Nick Harbor sat between 12 and 17 his whole career. What you need to do is actually get that ADOT down to like 9, 10 and give him opportunities to just get going. And they've never used Nick Harbor that way. Now, if they can use Harbor like they used Burks, then absolutely that play you're talking about, just down the sideline and shoot, because now the defense is in conflict. He's been running crossing routes. He's been running, you know, comebacks. He's been just staying at the line of scrimmage, get the ball pitched out to him quickly and make a guy miss with blocking. If they can do that, it'd be incredible. And, you know, one of the things, like even going back to 21 and 20 for Burks at Arkansas, when the quarterback targeted him, they had an average of a 155 NFL passing efficiency mark. So every time that he was getting the ball, something good was happening. And you look at his catch rate, even his last year at Arkansas, Burks only had a 41% catch rate. So targets and receptions. Well, you know, last year, Nick Harbor had a 40% and he's been about 50% for his career. So get that ADOT down and let him do things that can be fun.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it. There's other guys that can get open and get downfield too. It's just nobody's going to catch Nick if he gets open. Mm-hmm. And you know, just kind of looking at it, because every single year from a personnel standpoint, just from a development standpoint with him, he's gotten better at one thing. You know, it was and then the next year he's carried that in and it's become a strength. Okay, so the first year when he's just kind of a freshman, he was pretty good at that crossing route, right? Okay. And he caught it most of the time. People say he doesn't have hands, but he catches most things, even young. You know, but didn't do much deep. I don't know why it was. And then the next year, around about the Missouri game, he starts getting open deep. We saw that the fades and all that good stuff. And then he carried that into the next year, you know, and the whole 24 season, especially down the stretch when he started catching 3-4 balls a game, that crossing route became kind of second nature. And then, so last year from Virginia Tech on, it was the deep stuff. I mean, that was led the SEC in yards per reception because most of what he caught was way, way, way down the field. And, to your point originally about bringing the ADOT down, I think, Matt, that the silver lining or the hey, here we go, the lights come on, was that A&M catch and run.
Yeah, exactly.
How many times have I talked about that before last year? What I want to see Nick Harbor do is catch the ball, turn up field, and run away from everybody. Or maybe hopefully, maybe even break a tackle, you know.
Yeah. Well, and like to say, hey, that can work, JC, Nick Harbor last year averaged over 24 yards per kickoff return. So get the ball in his hands and he can maneuver through areas. And then when he sees daylight, man, he's just gone. But you know, Nick Harbor had 10 contested catches last year. So like where the defense was just draped all over him, he caught 4 of them. That's a pretty good number.
Yeah, he's not, you know, I mean, it's like people talk about natural hands. And this kid, I think it's Evion Lewis or Ivan Lewis. I don't know. Is it Ivan?
I'm or not sure how you
pronounce it. I thought it was Evion Lewis. Anyway, Lewis, they flipped from Kentucky. To me, that's a natural pass catcher, and not just with his hands. When you watch him on film, he'll adjust his body to put himself in the best position to catch the ball. Nick hadn't always done that, right? Because it's not natural. But I do think that with this system, you know, because we're all curious to see how Sellers performs in it. The Matt Fuller talk makes everybody kind of, you know, everybody's going to look at the offensive line. At receiver, there's so many names, you know, and there's almost like, oh, Nitro Tuggle, you know, hopefully he does this, or how is Jaden Sellers going to be this year? All that good stuff. And Matt has an article that will be released about 30 minutes after I finish editing it and we get off the show on thebigspur.com that dives into some of this stuff. It's 20 stats about last year's team that are applicable to this year's team. So please check that out. You can join for $1 still, thebigspur.com, 45 minutes, appointment reading. But Harbor may not be one that we've kind of dug into the how on him, other than, oh, he could be pretty good. So,
well, JC, I want to throw this by you. For Nick Harbor's career at South Carolina, he's only played about roughly 20% of his passing snaps in the slot. And I think that if you put him in the slot and you talk about the Treylon Burks comparison, Treylon Burks was about 75% of his passing snaps in the slot. So why do you put someone in the slot? Well, because they're going to be going over the middle. They're going to be doing different things. They're going to be put in against safeties, against linebackers. And this entire time, they've just forced Nick Harbor out wide and run as fast as you can, as long as you can, and maybe the offensive line can hold up. So the creativity is what Kendall Briles is going to bring back. So I'm going to be watching Nick Harbor's slot snaps as the season progresses, because I think you can unlock something there.
Amen. And that's a great way to end it.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Anderson with a killer take on Nick Harbor. Phil, let's get out of here, brother.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Working for the weekend. All right. For Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock of thebigspur.com, I am JC Sherbert. That's Mad Dog. Phil Mullinax, also of thebigspur.com and the ITG. And Matt does the late night Gamecock. So we do a lot of things. We got a lot going on.
We got about 30 hours of content. You can watch us every week. Yeah, just
check us out. Go hit like on our YouTube channel. We had a bunch of people from Vietnam like the YouTube channel about a year ago. I don't know why. So we've lost 39 subscribers. I was freaking out. Did we say something wrong? And I look, they're all from Vietnam.
It's like, yeah, I was looking at that too. I'm like, we keep staying around.
There's a Vietnamese project
number, but the number is red and changed. So, I'm like, good. We're getting rid of the bots and we're getting real.
Yeah. News. So please go hit subscribe on the YouTube channel if you can, folks. Appreciate everybody in the McKellar Enterprises chat box. I guess it's kind of the end of season 4. It's been a great one. Just got a text from one of our listeners, Hane, said, you know, it's been a tough year, but you guys are really, you know, we enjoy listening because you make us feel like we're sitting around in a bar talking about Gamecocks. That's the point, folks.
That's why we started.
When I had to be all stuffy here, I mean,
quote that, tweet that, man.
TD says, see y'all in 2 weeks. I don't know. The 20th does not seem like 2 weeks. That's SEC media days. We'll have some clarification on our social media.
And I'll still be here on Sunday nights, guys. You won't lose me.
The late night Gamecock show continues. I don't know about the others, but we're going to get fourquarterfriday.com launched. That's a high school site. We're excited about that. Those of you that are already members of the Big Spur, you'll be able to read everything. I don't think you'll be able to mess. You'll be able to mess with it. It's part of On3 Rivals, so we'll be fired about that. Roger from Woodruff says, enjoy the break. We will.
Yeah, man.
Oh, when we get back, it gets real, right? Once you get SEC Media Days, it's anticipation. It's like the Christmas season. SEC Media Days is like the Black Friday of football.
It's the fastest 5 months ever. This is Black Friday.
Thank God, because it's like, thank God this is a fast 5 months or however long. Because, oh, you're talking about Black Friday. I'm sorry.
No, that was a comparison. Like Black Friday kicks off like the fastest 5 weeks of the year.
Yeah. 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 All right. And
we've had 5 months since Gamecock football played.
SEC Media Days kicks off the fastest 5 months of the year. Like, and it's been a struggle here for two straight seasons. On this back end, this early part of the calendar year, just trying to suffer through what all's been going on.
But we, light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Aye.
And we appreciate everybody hanging in there on the good ship Gamecocks, for a while. But, yeah, we'll be back, folks, better than ever. And certainly hit us up if you need anything. And we're out. Holla.
See ya.